Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
The world's preeminent talk radio portal.
All about your health.
And now here's Melanie Cole, MS, host of Staying Well.
You know, many of us know that BPA is a nasty chemical that can be released in plastic, but we'd like to know really what else is it in, how is it released. My guest is Dr. Linda Birnbaum. She's the director of the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences of the National Institutes of Health. Dr. Birnbaum, tell us a little bit about what BPA is, where we might find it, and how dangerous is it for us?
Well, BPA is a chemical that's been in commerce for many, many, many years. It's used in extremely high volumes, usually in plastics, although it's also used, for example, in thermal papers. It can be used in dental sealants and in a number of other places. We find it in linings of cans, for example, in the epoxy resins of cans. It used to be present in polycarbonate bottles like baby bottles or your Nalgene bottles that when you were a runner. Most of those uses are not they're not being used anymore. It's a chemical to which we're all exposed pretty much all the time.
Okay, so when you mention plastic, and everybody today, Dr. Birnbaum, is using plastic water bottles, what do we do about that? Should we stop using those things?
Well, I think that most of the plastic water bottles, at least the newer ones, in fact, for several years, most of the water bottles have not contained BPA anymore. There have been other substitutes that have been used rather than BPA, and that's a whole other discussion we could have.
Okay, so what do we do about this? Where do we sort of look out for it?
Well, I think our greatest concern for the potential health effects of BPA is related to development. So it's related to the developing child, either before it's born or when it's an infant. I think those are the times that we have the most concern for BPA. So I think that, for example, the FDA now limits the use of BPA, for example, in baby bottles, so that to cut down on the potential for exposure that might occur then. So I think when you can avoid some of the exposures during a critical time, that's actually being done, and that's the good news.
And are there things, is it leaching into some foods that we might, what are the health effects that we might be worried about?
Well, I think a lot of them are related to effects that might occur during development, that early life exposures can lead to a variety of diseases or health problems that you might not know about until you reach adulthood. And these might include several kinds of cancer, obesity, diabetes, cardiovascular problems and reproductive effects. There's also some evidence that it could have effects on neurobehavior. Many of these studies we're finding when we look in human populations, we can see associations between these kinds of effects and BPA. And I think the important thing is that there are animal studies where we see the same kinds of effects as we see in people. So that provides some biological plausibility to the possibility that these are actually real things that are happening.
Does it have to be on the label, Dr. Birnbaum? I mean, they say you shouldn't microwave plastic, and that's sort of one thing. Do we look for this on the label? Do we wash out our plastic Tupperware? I mean, I think I probably still have Tupperware from my mother. And we should probably not be using that. And now things like Tupperware are coming out, glass, stainless steel, that sort of thing. Should we be looking out for that?
Well, I think people have concerns about what may be in plastic. There are chemicals other than BPA that may be in plastic. And that if plastic gets scratched, more chemicals might leach into your food. If you heat things in plastic, more might leach into your food. So a pragmatic approach that many people may choose to do is just not, for example, cook in plastic. That's one approach. I think BPA's use in plastic has decreased. We're finding that, at least our assumptions are, and from our data, is that most BPA comes through food and beverages, for example, canned food and beverages in certain kinds of plastic containers. But as I said, there may be other routes of exposure, including through the skin. I mentioned cash register or any kind of thermal paper receipt can contain BPA, but we really don't have good data yet to understand how much of BPA, you know, that you touch with your hands on a piece of thermal paper actually gets into your body.
Well, and you mentioned canned food, you know, or canned soda pop or something along those lines. Canned food, you know, would seem canned vegetables, you know, and in this day when we're trying to all eat healthier, canned vegetables are certainly a way to get those vegetables in if you're somebody who doesn't know how to cook fresh vegetables. Is the risk worth the health benefits?
Well, I think, you know, a healthy diet is always at the top of our list that people should eat healthy foods. I think there has been some data looking at different kinds of canned foods. Certain kinds of canned foods might have more BPA than other kinds of canned foods where it's very low. But again, I think many of the manufacturers are listening to public concerns and are moving to try to identify new ways to do their canning without the use of BPA.
That's interesting. So if they're looking at ways to do their canning without it, tell us where the research is going now and what's kind of on the horizon for this.
Well, I'm actually stepped out of a meeting that we're having here in North Carolina with more than 100 researchers who are studying the health effects of BPA. They're all here together to kind of provide an update on their research findings. We do this every year to try to keep the researchers and everybody else informed about really what's going on with BPA studies. And we share their preliminary findings. When you get people together, they actually develop collaborations, and they actually also share samples as well as their findings. And I think as I said, there have been more than 140 studies that we have funded that have been published in the past just 2.5 years. Related to the potentially adverse effects of exposures to BPA at quite low doses.
Now, can people see these studies? Are these kept under wraps?
All of the studies, once they're completed, everything is published in the peer-reviewed literature. It's all totally available for anyone to look at.
Do you think that this is something that hasn't been talked about publicly before very much?
Well, I think there has been growing concern with BPA. In 2008, my national toxicology program released a report expressing some concern about some developmental health effects of BPA. That echoed a grantee, a summary of the data that grantees had put together a year before called the Chapel Hill Consensus. There's been growing work that suggests that BPA at levels that are present in the population may be associated with some adverse effects. Now, many of these effects are relatively subtle. You know, it's not like you can pinpoint that because this person has elevated or because their mother had elevated BPA, they have a certain problem. You have to pick this up in human epidemiology kinds of studies where you're looking at a population and you can see a shift so that people, for example, who have higher BPA may show more of a risk than people with lower BPA concentrations. I think we still don't have all the data that we need to confirm how serious or not this problem may be. Many of the epidemiology studies have been a single point in time, so what we call cross-sectional studies. What we really need are long-term studies where you follow people and you can follow their BPA and you can follow to see if they have effects. But everything we're seeing in the human population, which has shown an association with BPA, now that people have begun to ask the question, because 5 years ago nobody was asking the question. Now people are asking the question, and in fact what we're seeing in the human population is modeled by what we have seen in experimental animal studies or in mechanistic studies, for example, using cultured human cells.
Well, and that's how the research is showing us, listeners, what we need to be careful of. They are there doing these studies right now, having the meetings to try and keep us safe. Thanks so much for listening. This is Melanie Cole for Radio MD. Stay well.